My message today isn't on a simple life. It's on a more simple life. Important. Well, for those who may not have heard, Joel Osteen. I was waiting. I knew I had to pause there and give everybody a moment to react to that. Televangelist, leading voice in the prosperity gospel movement, has, he's recently come under fire in relationship to the flooding from Harvey in Houston. When the flooding started, when it started getting really bad, he announced that he couldn't open his church for survivors because it was flooding. Well, folks got inside and filmed it, and it wasn't flooding. As things tend to go in these days, the internet basically came down on him, shaming him and his actions to absolutely no end. Within 24 hours, he changed his whole story, saying that the reason that they hadn't opened was because they hadn't been asked, which brought on even more ridicule. Now, ultimately, he did open the doors and used it as an opportunity to ask for monetary donations. It shouldn't be surprising that folks began wondering out loud whether or not this multi-millionaire and purveyor of the prosperity gospel was, well, more concerned with the well-being of his multi-million dollar megachurch than in the people who were in need. I have to say, personally, I find it a very convincing argument that that's probably what happened. Ultimately, though, whether it's true or not is less important for this talk than the fact that it's so easy to believe that it could be. You see, Osteen identifies as a Christian, a follower of Jesus. The thing is, Jesus was the very embodiment of a life of compassion and simplicity. He taught both by word and in deed that we shouldn't let acquiring material possessions rule our lives. Quite the contrary, he taught that those kinds of things can actually get in the way of leading a compassionate life. I mean, even the Bible itself talks quite a bit about the need to find a balance between material and spiritual sides of life. Proverbs 38 says, "Give me neither poverty nor wealth." Matthew 6, 19 through 21 says this, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Store up treasures in heaven. For wherever your treasure is, there so is your heart also." John 3, 17 says, "If a man has enough to live on, and yet when he sees his brother in need and shuts his heart against him, how can it be said that the divine love dwells within him?" The fact is that the wisdom of simplicity is a theme with long historical roots. The value of the benefit of living simply are found in practically every one of the world's major wisdom traditions. In Eastern spiritual practices like Buddhism and Hinduism and Taoism, the teachings encourage a life of material moderation and spiritual abundance. From the Taoist tradition, we have the saying from Lao Tzu, "He who knows he has enough is rich." From the Hindu tradition, Mahatma Gandhi once wrote, "Civilization in the real sense of the term consists not in the multiplication, but in the deliberate and voluntary reduction of wants. This alone," he says, "promotes real happiness and contentment." He believed that moderating our needs for wants increases our ability and desires to help others. For him, true civilization, that is, humans being civilized, true civilization emerges from each of us being in loving service to each other. Also, from the Hindu tradition, is the idea of non-possessiveness. Said differently, it's the idea that of only taking what is needed and finding satisfaction in our lives through that kind of a balanced living. One of the more developed concepts of a life balanced between material excesses and simplicity actually comes from Buddhism. Buddhism actually recognizes that our basic material needs, well, those need to be met in order to realize our full potential. But it does not consider material wealth as a goal for happiness in life. Instead, what Buddhism recognizes is that material parts of life are a means to an end. That end that it looks to is being awakening oneself to our deeper nature as spiritual beings. It's a balance between mindless materialism and needless poverty. Even the Greeks understood something of the dangers of overly focusing on material goods. Plato, Socrates, Aristotle all recognized the importance of what they called the golden mean. It was basically seen as the middle path through life. The goal was no excess, but equally no lack. The end goal was a life of sufficiency. They did not see the materialism of the world and its stuff as the primary purpose of life. Instead, the stuff of the world was more of a tool for the primary purpose of life, learning and spiritual pursuits. You know, considering the U.S.'s consumerist-focused society, it is somewhat surprising to consider that many of the early settlers of the U.S. were Puritans. See, it's somewhat surprising because the Puritans stressed hard work, moderate living, and participation in the life of the community and a devotion to things spiritual, not material. And another early influencer in U.S. history were the Quakers. And they taught that material simplicity was an important aid in growing towards spiritual perfection. And while they did not teach that it was normal, let me back up and say that differently. They did teach that it was normal to want to benefit from the fruits of your labors. They also recognized that our time on earth is brief and emphasize that people should place much of their love and attention on more spiritual things. I guess what I'm saying is the concept of leading a more simple life is not some new agey thing. Its importance has been around for a very long, long time. Humanity just seems to have a confoundingly difficult time holding on to it. But there's always those who do. Bright lights in the sometimes dark lifestyle of excessive material possessions. In the end, Osteen did do the right thing and opened up his mega church to the Harvey survivors in Houston, according to him, because the city finally asked him to, but there's another story that made the news about a guy who was more able to see past the false importance of materialism that society too frequently worships. He is known as Mattress Mack, the Mattress King of Houston. Like Osteen, he is a multimillionaire. And when the floodwaters started to rise, he opened up several of his furniture stores to the survivors without being asked. There's actually these wonderful, I mean, absolutely wonderful pictures floating around the internet of groups of kids leaping up and down on all of his mattresses. It's a picture of joyful glee in the midst of tragedy. Mattress Mack may not be exactly practicing simplicity, but equally, he doesn't let his material excess get in the way of a more spiritual outlook that places an emphasis on people and their well-being. The reality is that there are a lot of health and spiritual benefits to leading a more simple life. For starters, and possibly the most obvious thing, in general, the more simple of a life you lead, you know, the less stress you tend to have in your life. Cutting back the stress in our lives gives us more time to, you know, to relax and enjoy the little things in life. It's the old adage of that at the end of your life, you want to remember the good times of your life with your family and friends and not how much time you spent in the office. Now, not only that, without even changing your diet or working out more, the reduction of stress in a more simple life can lower your blood pressure and reduce the risk of certain heart diseases. For example, stress can directly increase the heart rate and blood flow, and it causes the release of cholesterol and triglycerides directly into the bloodstream. Those things are directly related to heart disease. Living a more simple life, as I've said, reduces that stress and can reduce the likelihood of heart disease in many people. Stress can also trigger things like migraines and colds and even autoimmune conditions. If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, well, there's evidence that simplifying your life can actually sometimes help. When things are too busy and complicated, we all have this tendency to get lost in sort of a reactionary lifestyle, say things that we don't actually mean, and how we sometimes in those cases allow things to blow up completely out of proportion. When we have the time to think before responding, to reflect, we can answer appropriately from a thoughtful place instead of a sort of fight and flight mentality. When we reduce the commitments and obligations and eliminate common stressors like debt and unfulfilling jobs and hurtful relationships, we have time to take better care of our own heart and soul. There is more time for, you know, a nap or writing or being creative, space for meditation and other life improving practices. And it shouldn't be surprising that living with less ends up costing less. As folks begin practicing more simple lifestyles, they frequently begin to realize that they do not need as large of a paycheck as they once thought they did, which actually can lead to accepting a less stressful job, which then tends to give more time to enjoy life. When we free up resources, we need less to be happy and have time to consider what matters most. And naturally, that can lead us to be more loving, more caring, and even more charitable. These invisible benefits become completely tangible. And they are the secret behind being more with less. In most cases, just a taste of the inner workings of simplicity will inspire us to go after even more simplicity. It would seem that at least to some degree, we naturally want less of the meaningless stuff and more of what really matters. So go figure. Leonardo da Vinci once said, Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. And it makes sense. Living more simply declutters your daily schedule, declutters your environment, and lends to a more contemplative lifestyle. And because of it, simplifying actually helps eliminate stuff such as the activity of busyness, superfluous chores, unnecessary responsibility. It gives us room to breathe and relax without feeling overwhelmed and pressured from the noises of life. Ultimately, simplicity and simple living looks different for every person and every family. And changes can be made whenever and however is best for each person's life. What doesn't change is the reality that most spiritual movements have always understood the great benefits of living a more simple life, and now even science is backing up that claim. It is not something that you have to leap right into. It can be done little by little. But I hope if you aren't already putting the practice of simplicity into your life, that maybe today you've heard enough to make the choice to begin to. And speaking of simplicity, I want to say you handled that pretty well. We only had a couple of glitches. A little more practice and you'll have it perfect. This is the time now for you to respond to our message or our theme for today. Are there those who would like to share their perspectives? Vance?
Thanks, Gracia. Now the pressure is on. John Muir, who was the founder of the Sierra Club and the person who led the charge to save Yosemite from being dammed and developed, was asked later in his life in an interview with a reporter, what's the difference between yourself, Mr. Muir, and John D. Rockefeller? And Muir's response was, oh, that's simple. I have enough money. I love that.
Great comment. I told you had more wisdom. See, Mark, thank you so much for that message. It's just a powerful piece and should certainly be shared widely. So when I was listening to the message, one of the things that I wrote down was, and I don't remember who stated it, and I could have written it. Oh, my name is Gracia, was the golden memes.
The Greeks.
No excess and?
No poverty.
No
extreme excess, no extreme poverty.
No extreme excess and no extreme poverty. Yeah. And so it reminds me of a project. I work on a lot of different projects, thank God, since I think I have ADHD. So I get a chance to just dip in a lot of pools of knowledge. And one project I worked on was with some economists and futurists, where we were a couple of years ago evaluating the concept of universal income in America, mm-hmm. where everyone would receive a particular amount of money that would cause them to have no extreme poverty and no excess. So we wouldn't have this whole issue that we have today of, you know, people having needs and then, you know, always having to feel as though they're being looked down upon because they can't meet basic requirements of life. And I don't know how much individuals are looking at this particular concept here in the congregation, but it's interesting to note that Hawaii became the first state in America to actually pass a bill to look at that concept of universal income for their state.
Thanks for sharing that. Are there others?
I will piggyback on Gracia. I'm Elsie, and there is a lot. There are communities in Canada that have experimented with universal income, and the result is that there's a much less stress, and people can be creative. And
you may know this. Isn't there one country that does that now? Finland. I knew it was one.
Finland.
I couldn't remember who it was. Finland.
Okay. Yeah. And they also have the best educational system, supposedly,
go
in
figure.
The world.
When people aren't worried about eating, they're actually able to learn.
The funny thing about Finland is when I was in the fourth grade and I grew up in a segregated South, Finland was the country we were all told to do a research project or whatever they called it at fourth grade, scrapbook or something, on one country. And Finland was the country I chose.
Wow.
In the fourth grade.
Are there others who have thoughts they want to share with the community? Not then, Elsie. I'll turn it back over to you.
No,